Hi and welcome to another episode of The Emma Gunn Show. I am your host, Emma Gunn Wardner, and I'm thrilled to welcome my friend and colleague Alice Hart Davis onto the show to talk about her new book, The Tweakments Guide. If you are a regular listener of the podcast, you'll know that I recently documented my first ever cosmetic procedure, the fat freezing treatment Cool Sculpting, and that I mentioned that it had made me much more open-minded to other cosmetic tweaks. It is, therefore, perfect timing for me to chat to Alice, who has pretty much tried everything and has documented each and every procedure in this new book. Alice's career as a health and beauty journalist, as she explains in this episode, evolved several years ago when she started testing, in inverted commas, treatments. An injectable here, a bit of laser there, and before you know it, she's the beauty journalist that other beauty journalists call brave, because she really will go there and try anything, even if it's completely brand new for her readers. Her understanding of these procedures is vast, and she's not just an informed end user. She really understands what each tweakment promises, how it's supposed to work, if you go back and look at all the science, and what result is reasonable to expect. So not only does the book drill down into all these various cosmetic procedures you can think of, it's also a guide of the sorts of things you should know before you sign that disclaimer, way before you sign that disclaimer, including a guide to how to find a good practitioner. And that's also accompanied on the website with this constantly growing resource and database, which is a global database of how to find a good practitioner, as well as where to start. Yes, there's even a chapter on entry-level tweakments and how to ease your way into all these sorts of things. I used to think the first thing I'd ever do was an injectable, but actually there's a whole host, a whole raft of amazing treatments that can have a positive impact on how you look before, way before you have to think about injectables, and they're all in this book. In this conversation, Alice is really open and honest about what she's had done, and even open and honest about when they've gone wrong. And unfortunately, listeners, it has gone wrong. Not all the time, but she's open and honest about it. I say it in the show and I stand by it here. I have a lot of brilliant beauty colleagues on speed dial, who I can easily text if I have a question about this sort of thing. The subject of cosmetic procedures is something I feel very lucky. I can text somebody who really knows and say, who's the best for baby Botox? Or I can text somebody else and say, honestly, hand on heart, who does the best filler in London? And this book is very much that kind of resource for anyone who is curious about cosmetic procedures. It really is like having that beauty buddy who really knows in your back pocket, which is why I do think it's a wonderful thing to look at before you try a treatment. I'm thoroughly enjoying working my way through the book and feel as though I have an impartial expert in Alice who also really cares. She's got this big sister vibe as well, because she doesn't want to steer me wrong. So she's guiding me through any future decision I may or may not make about having work done. I really hope you enjoy this episode of The Emma Gunn Show. I'm really enjoying this book and I hope you enjoy the book and Alice Hart Davis. Alice Hart Davis, thank you so much for being on The Emma Gunn Show.
Well, thank you for asking me.
I'm excited because you have a new book out called The Tweakments Guide, Fresher Face. And you really are the journalist that I've known for a long time who seemingly has no fear.
That's very kind of you. I have a lot of fear, Em, so I'm scared of everything. But with tweakments, I have been writing about this area for a long time. Mm-hmm. I've been trying out these procedures and I felt it was necessary to share it, what I've learned, with the wider world, because it's been an area that people haven't really talked about very much in the past. It's been quite a taboo, good deal of stigma, good deal of fear and shame and judgment around it. But now that is beginning to change. And I just suddenly got the bit between my teeth a couple of years ago with this thinking, rather than writing a skincare book or whatever I was trying to push along at the time, I thought, this is what I need to do because I've done so much in this area and I don't care what people think about me sharing it. I feel I need to get it out there because people are so confused in this area about what does what and what they should try and how things work and what the treatments feel like. So getting back to the fear, I've tried most of those treatments in the book, but I'm always still a bit fearful when approaching a new treatment, because these things are And they're non-invasive, mm-hmm. Or minimally invasive, I suppose you'd say, if they involve needles. Mm-hmm. But still, you're submitting your face, your lips, your cheeks, whatever, to a doctor armed possibly with a sharp needle or a laser. And, it's right to be a bit anxious about that.
Yes. So let's take it back to before tweakments, because mm-hmm. there's a lot to be said about this book. And it really is, given, as listeners will know, as you know, Alice, because I've just told you, about my first dabbling with my first cosmetic procedure.
Yes.
I now feel as though this is information and that I want to consume, but I want expert guidance and I want an independent expert guide. And that's what you are. So your career is, for a long time, you've been a health and beauty journalist.
Yes. I began specialising in health about 20 and a bit years ago, beauty shortly after that. And I was the right age for all this. Also, I was all, as in all this anti-aging stuff. I hate talking about it as anti-aging because, you know, we all get old. Mm. I don't like that as a phrase in general, but as a shorthand mm-hmm. for this whole area, it's useful. And I was on the Evening Standard, so we're always looking at what's new, what's trendy, mm. what's coming along in London. And the features editor was obsessed with all these new treatments. What are these doctors doing? They're doing Botox. They've got these new fillers. It's all a bit under the radar. Get in there. Go and find out. Mm. Who are they and what are they doing and what's it like? And because I had got 3 young children, full-time jobs, generally looking rather exhausted, I was curious about all this. It took me quite a long time to actually try a procedure rather than writing about it. But when you start looking into this area, it soon becomes quite tempting. And although I would be working a lot with younger journalists who'd also always say, oh, that stuff's poison, I would never put it in my face. Mm. You sit there and think, sweetie, you just wait till you're pushing 40 and you wake up and you look in the mirror and that face looking back at you is looking cross and tired and anxious when you're not feeling it. And you think, would it be so bad? Could I just try it? What right. difference would it make? Mm.
No, so that's what... That's the kind of journalism you were doing.
Yes, so I started writing about all that and the whole area was growing and discovering what creams could do to improve your skin and the quality of your skin, how they really can help remodel it, the more active ingredients. And then backing across into these procedures, it's been quite a journey. The whole area's grown a lot.
So speaking of skincare, I do think that's really interesting. I would say in the last few years, because of certain skincare brands coming out, there's been a lot of talk about the democratization of beauty and this greater understanding of what active ingredients can do. But that it wasn't anything particularly new. This drum was being banged for a long time. It's just, why do you think it's picked up and taken root now?
I think, when I first started writing about skincare, particularly on newspapers, which didn't traditionally cover beauty, the prevailing attitude from the top was always, this stuff doesn't really work, does it? I mean, that's a generally middle-aged man's perspective, and it was usually middle-aged men editing these sections. But it all changed. I'll tell you where it all changed for me was in 2007, when Horizon did that documentary where they mentioned the Boots Protect and Perfect serum, which had clinical data showing it did as good a job as a prescription product. Mm-hmm. And I remember the health editor rushing up to me the next day and saying, it's incredible. They say this stuff works. I said, yeah, it has the data. And he said, but what about all the rest of it? Does any of the rest of it have data? He said, yes. He said, well, write about it then. This is only what I've been trying to do. But that changed the way the people I wrote for looked at it. So I was then encouraged to look at the brands who were producing the kind of ingredient-led stuff. This is more the kind of cosmeceutical area, you know, things with vitamin C, things with retinol, the importance of wearing sunscreen to protect whatever results you're getting, you know, what all those peptides can do if you use the stuff properly. I think a lot of people dabble with skincare, and what they do need to know is that if you want to get the results that any cream is claiming, you've got to use it like medicine, like it says on the packet, even if that package is a very lovely, beautifully done thing. It will say use twice a day, and then you should use it. It's not a drop in, drop out.
Right. Okay, that's really interesting.
Well, I think a lot of people take a bit of a what can we call it? What do they call it? A hodgepodge?
Yeah.
A lot of people dabble when it comes to skincare. Mm. They think, I'll try a bit of this, I'll mix a bit of that, it'll give a great result. But you'll get a better result if you are consistent mm-hmm. with the use of it. It sounds a bit boring. Take product A, use it till it's used up, see what happens. But that's the way to tell if something's really working for you.
Yeah. How do you feel, incidentally? Because I have been sent recently some really expensive, really beautiful skincare. And I won't mention the brand because I don't think that's particularly...
I'm going to sigh because...
But it's not airtight. The day cream and the night cream are not airtight. And so immediately...
Well, that might be fine because it may be so loaded up with preservatives that it'll be absolutely fine in terms of not going off. But in terms of, do you want all those preservatives? Do you want to be stuffing your fingers into it? There are so many better options, I feel, now. It seems a really old-fashioned thing to have an open jar... Mm-hmm. Or to have a heavily perfumed cream.
Yep.
You want something in a nice airtight packaging, something that the light isn't getting to it, the air isn't getting to it, and then it will maintain its efficacy the whole way through. But skincare is so fundamental. I mean, one of the messages in the book is that you should start with skincare because I think people often think they want to jump in the deep end when it comes to treatments, which worries me. I've got a lovely Insta friend who popped up out of the blue last summer saying, what about this treatment called Tixol? Is it okay to mention treatments? And Tixol is quite an aggressive treatment. It was described to me by the doctor who uses it as a waffle iron for your crow's feet.
Yikes.
And it's simply, it's very direct. It delivers a controlled burn all over your face. And as that heals, you get a lovely tightening, smoothing result. So my new friend pops up and says, what about Tixol? I said, yeah, great results. You can see the pictures of my before and afters. They're online. And then she comes back to me saying, oh, good, because I've got to step up my facial routine because all I use is sunscreen and baby wipes. And I have a job that keeps me outdoors most of the day. Yes. And I just... Oh, stop just a sec, sweetie. You know, before you jump off that high diving board with this really aggressive treatment, you know, look, there's lots of steps you could go through to get your skin in better nick, to see what you can do with that before you move on to aggressive treatments. But I think British women are particularly bad about that. They do nothing, then they get their nerve together and they go for something really quite hardcore. And there's no need to do that. You could start with skincare, you could move on to facials that involve a bit of laser light or microneedling, something in a really low dose.
Yeah, because also I think I too was like that until I've had a few conversations recently with people, and you realise actually tweakments or any kind of cosmetic procedure is just another pillar, but the other pillars have to be in place.
Completely.
Order to support really good skin.
Yes, yes. You've got to eat right. You've got to get enough sleep. That's a huge one. I think particularly at the moment when we're all happily checking our devices till whatever time, there's good studies showing that if you have less than 5 hours sleep a night, your skin's ability to repair itself and maintain moisture levels, etc., absolutely nosedives. Stress is a huge one. Eating too much sugar is a big one. So yeah, lifestyle plays into it in a huge way.
And you have in this book, you have so many different treatments, and you've actually indexed them really well because you've done them by type, but then you've also done them by different chapters for different needs. So it's a very easy book to navigate. Like, you could go into that index. Yeah, I really like the way, because it's done two ways. You've got your treatment reviews, but then you've also done them by chapter. So,
well, the really tricky thing with this, I mean, it took me a while to get it straight, to work out how to present it, because most people come at this from the aspect of, I've got circles under my eyes, or I've got lines on my forehead. So you've got to look at it by concern. And yet, I sort of feel you want to explain what the available technologies are in the area, how they work, and what they can do. And the tricky thing is, if you've got wrinkles on your forehead, you might think of softening those with wrinkle-relaxing toxins, but you could also laser them. You could also do microneedling. You could also try that waffle iron blaster. All of these things help to regenerate the collagen in your skin, which is doing something different to the toxins, and it's trying to help people build up a picture of how you might approach these things, what's within your personal comfort mm-hmm. zone and budget, what kind of results they might give you, and whether you think the whole thing is worth it. Because that's the thing. I mean, these things aren't for everybody. I'm not saying everybody should go and do them. It's just, I know people are incredibly curious about this area. So it's just to try and say, for those who are curious, for those who want the independent advice, just have a look through this, find out how to keep yourself safe. Because the real difficulty in this area, in this country, is the dire lack of regulation mm-hmm. around this whole area. Because a lot of people go off to a doctor and they think, oh, they're a doctor, they'll only be using good stuff, I will be safe. And that is not the case here, unfortunately. So it is absolutely incumbent on anyone who is treatment curious to educate themselves about how to keep themselves safe in this area before they go and do anything. And of course, it all seems a bit boring doing endless research into safety and whatever else, but it's so crucial. Can't stress that enough.
But you've done the endless research, now you're just telling people how
to. It's all down there. This is the kind of the boring bits, but it's like, I've got a website that goes along with this as well. And I say in the video on that, you know, if you only read one thing on this site, just read the staying safe advice, just so that you know what you should be looking for, what you might have to contend with, so that you are educating yourself, because it's a buyer beware market, unfortunately.
So in terms of staying safe, is there one crucial thing, or are there several things that you really need to check?
You need to find a good practitioner who is a safe pair of hands.
And you have a chapter in the book.
There's a whole chapter on that. So even if somebody is a doctor or a qualified nurse or a dentist or these people who can work with aesthetics, they may not have a lot of experience with the particular product or technology you're looking at. Mm-hmm. Also, the thing that's impossible to tell is they may not have an aesthetic eye. You know, that old thing of anyone can pick up a paintbrush, but not everyone's Picasso, or maybe not Picasso. Maybe that's not. What do people say with hairdressing? They say anyone can pick up a pair of scissors, but they're not all Guido or Nicky Clark, or depending on who your hairdressing idol
Adam Reed
is. Adam Reed. Don't we love Adam Reed?
So what you're saying is that somebody can be legally able to wield that, inject that syringe full of whatever, but it depends whether they actually are able to.
Okay, yeah, just to backtrack on the legally able, depends what you're injecting. Botox is a prescription medicine, so only doctors, dentists, nurse prescribers, and surgeons, anyone with a doctor qualification can get those. Anyone who has the ability to prescribe. But when it comes to fillers, they are just regulated as medical devices. So anybody can buy them and administer them to anyone else. You and I can go and buy them. Emma is goggling, listeners.
And I've got big eyes already.
No. But I'm quite surprised it's a story I haven't ever been asked to go and do. Because you can go on fillerworld.com, whatever. You can buy these products. In other countries, it's more tightly controlled, but here you can buy them. You could do a short training course. Some of these training courses are only a day or two. You maybe get to inject an orange. Maybe you get to inject breast implants. They're always good for getting the feel of a needle going through a skin. But have these practitioners practiced on faces? You know, this is why it's so important to have somebody who really knows what they're doing, because it's perfectly legal for anybody to do that. And there's also not that many fillers that are available or for use in the States, where it's more tightly controlled. You know, over here, there's hundreds. In the States, there's about 8 brands that are FDA approved.
So is it okay as a consumer to say, have you injected this into somebody's face before?
For sure.
Excuse me, that's my stomach. My stomach's rumbling. Sorry, listeners.
As a consumer, you need to go and ask all the obvious questions. How long have you been doing this? How long have you been using this product? What happens if something goes wrong? Are you qualified to treat complications? Because where we see problems in this area, you know, when we get horror stories in the newspaper or on social media of somebody who's had their lips blow up, somebody's injected a blood vessel and it's all swollen and the tissue's starting to die around it, often the people who've done that work, when the poor person who's had the stuff go wrong goes back to them and asks them to fix it, they aren't able to do that. And they right. it takes time to go and find a decent practitioner who can reverse that work. It can usually be reversed if they've used hyaluronic acid fillers. That's the most commonly used type of filler because that stuff can be dissolved. But if it's not tackled, you have huge problems. So your practitioner needs to be competent in using the stuff, using good products, and also to be competent to fix problems should problems arise. And all the good practitioners are very honest about this. They say problems can crop up at any stage. There was one doctor I was talking to recently who said she'd had no problems with fillers for the first 9 years she was using them. And then she had a slew of complications, or a slew, probably like three in the next year. But she was saying, I'd never seen these things before. So and because she was really experienced by then, couldn't understand what was causing them because she was following best practice and everything. So it's tricky.
Well, what I was going to ask as well, obviously we've got to do the research, not just about the treatment that we're having and the person who's applying it or doing the work, as it were. What was the first procedure you had?
I first had my nose-to-mouth lines injected. Actually, I'd gone to interview Rita Rakus, Dr. Rita Rakus, who even back in 2002 was the London lip queen. She was doing lovely, subtle work on lips, but I was far too scared when she offered to inject my lips. So she looked at my face and these great grooves coming down from nose to the corner of the mouth. And she popped a bit of filler in there and it didn't hurt very much. It was all quite easy and it looked much better. And I was so sort of stunned and amazed at having it done. I went off to the hairdresser straight after that, who, of course, sharp-eyed hairdresser, instantly said, what have you done? I said, nothing. He said, you have. I said, okay, this is what I've tried. The interesting thing is that is a procedure that not so many people will do these days. I know Tracy Mountford was talking about this when you talked to her, because actually so it's a good example of kind of old style work that was done 15 years ago versus what you do now. Because now to lift that area, what they do is to inject on the cheek really quite deep to add a bit of structure to the face that lifts up the whole cheek pad. And then that softens that bit without you having to stuff anything in the actual lines.
It's that difference, isn't it, that she said, which is an expression I hadn't heard before, that made me chuckle, the chasing lines.
Yes, it was all about chasing lines. They chased away all the forehead lines with Botox. They chased away all the grooves by simply filling them in. But now it's a really interesting development in the... First, it was the sort of softening of the face by a volumetric approach of putting back the volume that gets lost in the cheeks, in the lips, in the temples. I love having a bit of filler in my temples, but not least because it lifts the tail of the eyebrow a bit, because otherwise I think my eyes collapsing down like this and I'm pulling faces.
You feel
and,
too stern.
You feel too stern. And there was the volumizing approach that came through, and now it's all being discussed in a sort of emotional approach. So rather than going and saying, doctor, I've got these lines, they're bothering me, the doctor will ask you, how do you want to feel about your face? So that you'll say, I feel I look sad. I feel I look angry. And so that means they know they want to work on the whole expression, you know, because there'll be multiple factors causing that, whether it's a tendency to pull down the corners of your mouth. What I tend to do is go like this. What I'm doing this is pulling down the corners of my mouth, making that upside down
smile.
Upside down smile. And which I didn't even realise I did until some doctor kindly pointed it out to me. And why he pointed it out was because a couple of spots of wrinkle-relaxing toxin, that's usually Botox, but other toxins are available, in those muscles just stops you doing that the whole time and has a nice result.
The whole way I've written out my things that I wanted to speak to Tracy about when I interviewed her, and I scribbled on my pad, bitch face. And then I thought, don't forget to ask about bitch face. I have resting bitch face.
Do you?
It's a defence mechanism from...
I don't see it. You've got your lovely face.
But you see me in the context of of work events and things where I would always be like, hi!
Nice sunny animation.
Yeah, but yeah. When I'm out and about, I'm like, bitch face, like, don't talk to me, I don't want this. And I know, and when people catch that in a picture, I think, oh, girl.
Yeah.
Relax. And so I said to her, would it be a reasonable thing? And I'm interested about the emotional vocabulary and language. Mm. If I went to somebody now and said, I would like some work done, and that work would likely be injectables, I would want to soften with the bitch face. The scowling.
I still don't see it, but I know what you mean. And yeah, that's totally what they can do, because a little softening of the muscles that you are using. Also, when they inject the muscles that you're using to scowl, as it settles in, you get this funny kind of feeling like your forehead's made of fudge, as one friend put it to me. It's like it's gone slow and sludgy and you can't quite get it to respond because you can't.
Yeah.
And just the awareness of that and how it feels when it's smoothed out. There is some research showing that if your forehead looks clearer and therefore you look happier, you have that knock-on effect of emotionally actually feeling happier as well. So, I mean, you can also become very aware of which muscles you're using by using the kind of sticking sellotape on your face, or those little things called frownies, which are kind of the sellotape. Yeah. They don't rip your face off when you take it off. But if you put it onto a smooth brow, then, of course, every time you frown, you're dragging at that paper and you become hyper aware of which muscles you're using. So we can't all project lovely serenity the whole time, but trying to stay serene,
relaxing,
can help.
That's making me think of what Dalton Wong said to me ages ago, the personal trainer, about something about yoga and having great posture and the link between that and depression.
Really? Okay, yes. I don't know about that.
I will have to find the data and put it in show notes.
That if you stand better,
of depression in people who have great posture, whether that be via Pilates or yoga, and I think the sort of conversation was, you never see a depressed yogi. But I'm sure that, but anyway.
You don't. I think they work through it by the time they come to doing all that, haven't they?
When the way you're saying that, I think, well, if I stand up straight, yes, I do have it. My countenance is different. I perhaps am probably brighter already. Mm. And it's just, that's very interesting that if you relax those frowny bits on your forehead, if the brain gets the message of, oh, everything's all right. It's all good, doll.
And also, because when one has that grumpy resting face and everything is drooping down, if you're a bit older like me, it's when you look down, if you look in an iPad, when you catch that reflection, you think, oh.
It's the front-facing camera when you go to take a picture that gets you.
And everything's drooping. And of course, tweakments can help there, because they can tighten the skin a bit. They can lift the contours a little bit. And it all just can help you feel a bit better about yourself. I mean, because that's a key thing in this area. It's not, for the vast majority of people, about looking younger. Mm. It's about looking fresher, brighter, more rested. Those are the adjectives that show up in the market research. And that's really what, you know, I don't want to look 35 again, but I don't want to look older than I am. Mm. I'm 55, and there's days in the morning where I... You think, 60's coming up next. But hey, bring it on, because I want to try and keep my face looking reasonably real. That's the other difficulty in this area, knowing when to stop. Because people say, is it a slippery slope? And I'm afraid the truthful answer is, it is. It is, because once you've tried something and had that bit of a wow from it, you think, well, where next? Now I've tried that one. So it is absolutely crucial to know where to stop, because there's so many overdone faces, particularly within the aesthetics industry. I mean, I go to a lot of conferences in the UK, around the world, which are all just the nurses, doctors, educators who work in this area. And a lot of people get quite keen on their own medicine. And there's one conference I work at every year. I moderate the live demonstration theatre there for a couple of days. So, you know, on stage, seeing a lot of people, working always with two great guys who man the audiovisual stuff at the back of the theatre. Always normal guys, always different guys every year. And I love to go up and say to them on the morning of the second day, hey guys, how's it going? And one of them will be absolutely guaranteed to say, all going fine, but the faces. <That's> say, yeah, it's very easy to get that face, the forehead looks a bit overbright, the eyebrows have risen up too high, the cheeks are too big. I mean, you know, listeners, you'll know what this is like. You know, the lips are projected too far forward. You were talking about this the other day. You know, those lips walk into the room before the person does. And that generally is not the kind of work that most of the practitioners in this area like to do. They want their results to be subtle. They would be distressed to think that their work was in any way obvious.
But I think it's that, I do think it's that thing of these tweakments aren't inexpensive.
You're absolutely right.
Obviously, there is a broad...
There is, but no, they're all expensive. It's a big commitment. And for sure, some people want to see where their money's gone.
Yeah.
But most people want an overall freshening result that will just help them feel better about themselves in the way a, not quite in the way a great haircut would, because you have to keep working at haircuts, don't you? But I mean, plastic surgeons always used to send potential patients to hairdressers first to say, you know, you think you want a facelift, but go away and buy a nice coat, have your hair done,
really?
See what that makes you feel about yourself. Yeah, just to say, if you're coming in here with various problems in your life and you think it's your face, go and see what other things might do to improve your appearance before you fixate on making a radical change. Because, you know, plastic surgery is pretty no going back, particularly if this was old style facelift. So 10 years ago, they would be just a lift the whole face. Now it tends to be done in a, I know, I can't watch these things.
No,
I've been invited to watch procedures and I'm just too much of a wimp.
I can't.
I was asked to watch a thread lift about 10 years ago when the thread lifts were in their first iteration, and I was nearly sick.
It's making me want to
I'm sorry. And I mean, thread lifts, I'm now okay with stuff like thread lifts, and I've tried to step up and watch things like the sort of fat removal, which isn't quite liposuction. It's like a mini version of liposuction.
Is that with the laser?
Yeah, sort of laser. It's laser assisted. But there's still a lot of rootling under the skin and breaking the stuff up, and then you see the stuff coming out of the tubes. And I can't. I love knowing about it. Mm. I love learning the technical details of it, but actually watching it. And so the thought that, because when it comes to surgical stuff, a lot of the surgeons are now doing procedures under, not just under sedation, which is easier to manage than anaesthetic, but doing under local anaesthetic. They're doing eye lifts, they're doing facelifts.
Oh God, Alice.
You know, I had one procedure under just local anaesthetic with a surgeon. It was removing a fatty growth from my leg, which they said, this is really easy. And so I thought, oh, this is great, you know, I'm awake. And I didn't think, shall I take photographs of it? Because it was a few years ago when we weren't all taking photographs of everything. But it was so strange being awake and aware of what was going on. And when they started pulling and tugging around inside my leg, which I could feel the pulling, but it was no pain.
Mm.
And then saying, ooh, this is interesting. And you think, what, show me, let me see. And they said, no, remain lying down, please. And you think, why? What does it look like? What mammoth growth have you found inside my leg? But the feeling there, it was just so overwhelmingly weird knowing that somebody was making a cut in my body and that I should remain still and calm on the bed. When you think, I couldn't do that. It's difficult enough to stay still with needles and things. I like to chatter to distract myself, which obviously there comes a point when people are working around your mouth, is, will you now please just be quiet?
Shut up.
Yeah, because I do try these things, and I've always talked about trying them, which hasn't always made me a lot of friends. But I think it's really important
to... What do you mean it hasn't made you friends?
Well, people judge you quite harshly for it.
Do they?
Yeah. I mean, particularly in online comments and articles and things, you know, they say, isn't this the old cow that has all that Botox? How come she's got so many wrinkles? And much worse. But...
What?
normally my husband reads the comments now, bless him, and he will say, I wouldn't. Any piece I've written very well like that, because often I will think, it's fine. I can read these things and you can laugh most of them off, but there'll always be one, even if it's one out of 500, that speaks to some deeply insecure part of yourself that strikes home, and then it's like Pandora's box, isn't it? You can't pop it back, or you can't unsee that comment.
It's like this podcast kit was bought at 5 o'clock in the morning on Amazon because I woke up in the middle of the night and somebody had slagged off the audio on the podcast.
Oh, Emma.
And so I was like, oh my God.
It's pretty damn smart and very portable.
But I, again, didn't look at the other people's emails that were...
All the hundreds who were downloading, the thousands, millions who were downloading and saying nice things and 5-star reviews.
Got the email that said, I'd listen to your podcast if the sound was better. But because it... I mean, I think the sound is adequate considering the kit I was using. Self-funded, self-published, thank you very much. Hmm. But also it tapped into, as you say, that insecurity in me that knew that I wasn't using the top range kit because I couldn't afford to.
But come on, you started this up off your own back. You've got it to where it is now, all on that perfectly adequate as it's ever sounded to me. So, okay, obviously I'm no sound engineer, but seems more than good enough to me.
It was the big old USB microphone, the Blue Yeti, and it's the one that when I put it in front of Roger Dove, because Roger's Roger.
What did you say?
He said something like, I don't know whether to talk into it or buy it dinner.
Yeah, thank you, Roger. But what are these called? These microphones?
Just,
okay.
Well, I just call them karaoke mics. They're just Behringer. Okay, they're fab. If you're interested in what the kit is, there is a post on emmagunz.com. But just to get back
where were we? Sorry.
You and writing about all of these treatments and the fact that you do have people be critical.
Yes.
Because this is something that's come up before about these treatments or tweakments being a vanity thing. Yeah. They're not. Well,
there's a lot of fear and shame and judgment around this whole area, and there has been. I mean, the stigma has lessened enormously over the time I've been writing about it. I mean, even 10 years ago, people were pretty reticent about admitting they'd had anything done. And, I mean, one thing that really winds me up is the way celebs won't ever admit the help they get in this area. You know, they get a lot of help, most of them. And yet, when they're interviewed, they will say, with a perfectly straight face, if it's me that's interviewing them, yes, I tried Botox once, but it made me look so weird, I've never tried it again. And now I do a lot of yoga, or I have alkaline juices, or whatever they say. And think, okay, so... And then I get asked to write pieces for the paper about the Botox backlash, because everybody in the public eye who has ever talked about this will say, but we've given up on it. I think this is not true. This is not true. So at the conferences, my little joke, I like to go up to the nurses and doctors in the coffee breaks and say, so, doctor, I hear you're doing less Botox. And they look at me like, is this a trick? And I said, well, the thing is, everybody I see talking about this, they all say they tried it once and they gave up. You know, if one multiplies that out, you guys must be going out of business. And then they all roar with laughter and say, you do realize this is my number one procedure. And it's just because we can all do such good, subtle work that people can get away with lying. But it's just not helpful to the normal person who is wondering how these guys look so good. Have they had a bit of help? Have they managed to remain in what Tracy Manford calls that state of cosmetic suspended animation for 15 years often? And you think, of course they've had a bit of help, but they don't need to admit it because the work is good and subtle and it might almost look normal. But if only they would talk about it, I feel that would open up the conversation for everybody else, because, you know, if only everyone was a bit more honest, you know, because normally we'll say, oh, I had this lovely facial, or I've been on holiday, or I've got a great new lipstick, or I've discovered this new mascara that curls lashes so it opens up your eyes, you know, and you need to say, I've actually had a dose of laser that took out some of that pigmentation. Yeah. That's why I look that bit fresher and brighter. Because the other thing, most of my friends don't do this kind of stuff. My girlfriends from university, they're not that interested. Some of them will even say, but why would you want to mutilate yourself like this? You know, 15 a piece I've written, they say, surely you can get other work. Mm. Surely you don't need to do these kind of things. No, you don't get it. I do these things because I want to. I choose to. I'm really curious about what they do. And I'm vain.
I love the idea. So,
no, they think, you know, quite rightly, old-style feminists, you know, why would you go near any of these things? Where is your self-respect?
As a fellow beauty colleague, but also someone who's admired you for years, the idea that your friends are like, Alice, if you've fallen on hard times, please don't have another injectable if you need the cash for your commission.
Actually, I want to see what this area can offer. And I'm very aware that, you know, that you should research your treatments, like I was saying, that you should not be a cosmetic guinea pig in this area. That's another thing I would stress, even though that is how I've been proceeding in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Because I know that being a guinea pig for these things is not always wise. Sometimes they do go wrong. Sometimes I've ended up like with half my forehead totally frozen for 3 months because I've had something that killed the nerve that lifts the muscle.
So you have had these treatments. And I mean, if you were to a ballpark figure of how many you've had over the last 20 years, what are we talking?
I don't know. A lot. How many are there in the book that I've reviewed? There must be about 50. How many times have I repeated some of these? Because these things are all temporary. Mm. You know, they all go away. So something like Botox, I would like to do 2 or 3 times a year. Not a lot. I like to let my muscles regain their function before we move on and slaughter them again. But and fillers, I won't have fillers more than about once a year. But then things like pigment clearing, lasery stuff. Hundreds, I think, is what I'm working up towards saying.
And so there have been instances where the results have not been
absolutely
ideal. And if you had been not a reviewer, if you'd been a paying customer, it would have been seen as an unsatisfactory
result. I'd been a paying customer, I might have been going for the lawyers. This particular one, I had been nagging the poor surgeon who was introducing the procedure into the UK for the best part of a year. It's a non-surgical procedure, but often surgeons like these things to sort of work alongside the kind of stuff they're offering surgically to their patients. And this was a new treatment. It had been used for killing nerves in the knees, because then you're free from knee pain if you suffered from chronic knee pain. The application here was to kill a little portion of the nerve that communicates with the muscle in the forehead to lift the forehead. So it was
like
being billed as an alternative to Botox. And the surgeon made me wait until he'd finished his trial group, which is very good of him. And then I said, let me come in with the cameraman, let me do all this. And I didn't realise it was a complicated treatment. It involved a little prong, like a three-pronged fork, like a little trident with 6mm needles that had to be plugged into the side of your head across the path of the nerve that travels up the side of your face and into the forehead. And then they pass liquid nitrogen into those prongs, not into your head, just through the prongs, but liquid nitrogen being so, so cold, it freezes the nerve.
The end of Terminator 2 for anyone who likes
freeze. Yes, and lovely one. And they repeat that until it's killed the nerve, and they can do up to 8 cycles. It's so cold, and they leave it there for 30 seconds, and it's like a deep ache. And then in between each cycle, they'd sit me up and say, raise your eyebrows. And this side gave in quite quickly and just dropped. And this side didn't respond at all. And after 8, they said, that's a maximum, we can't do any more. And I thought of a lot of questions to ask before this treatment, like, how long have you been doing it? What's the data behind it? What sort of results have you seen in your patients? But I had not thought to ask, can it work on one side of my face and not the other? So I had to go out with one side of my face collapsed down. It was like a shutter had dropped. I couldn't get my contact lenses in and out without lifting up.
And was that the result you wanted on that side?
No, I just hadn't thought it through. If you kill the nerve that's doing this job, of course the whole thing collapses. Whereas this side, boring, was moving up and down like normal. But the really bizarre thing was nobody actually noticed till I pointed it out, because I go around saying to beauty industry colleagues at press get-togethers, hey, look at my face. And then, of course, they would be absolutely appalled.
Mm.
And I bumped into a surgeon friend and said, hey, look what I've done now, all in aid of my research. And he was actually very cross and said, you are an idiot. That's permanent nerve damage. It won't recover. I said, but of course it will. And he said, it'll regrow at a millimetre a day or a week or whatever it is. And he said, you know that how? I said, because it says so in their marketing materials. And he was like, right. And just walked off. I thought, oh no, have I done something really stupid? But it did grow back. 3 months later, I'd sit there every morning trying to come on, eyebrow, please work. I'll be lovely to you ever after. And there was a twitch, and you think, oh, hallelujah, it's grown back. But one of the many things that made me think that was a stupid thing to do. And so if ever I'm now trying a new procedure, I always have to stop and think, because one day I will overreach myself, I'm sure, and then I'll have to wear a paper bag on my head for the rest of my days. And at least my dog will still love me. And if I'm lucky, my husband, because he'll just say, you are an idiot, but at least...
Do you feel like that, though? Do you feel that, because there have been so many innovations that perhaps I would wonder whether the risk 20 years ago when you started was greater than the risk that you might experience now going in for something
probably,
new?
Probably. I think you're absolutely right. It depends what level of newness it is.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Because new things come along the whole time, and sometimes they leap off into a sort of future dimension. There's a procedure at the moment quite popular. It's quite exciting sounding. It involves what's called plasma energy, though I don't quite understand that. But it makes a tiny sort of lightning bolt of electricity between the tip of the device that's delivering it and the skin. It results in a tiny, tiny burn on the skin. And if you work a pattern of those burns along a wrinkle, I'm pinching up the top of my eyelid to say we've got a fat eyelid wrinkle here, and you burn all the way along either side of that, you end up with a tiny little pattern of dots, but the skin tissue, the burnt skin tissue, contracts and it gives an instant eyelid lift. So as a demonstration, showman type thing on a stand at a conference, it's amazing. A non-surgical eye lift within 5 minutes. But those little tiny burns, they take a month or so to crust over, to heal, to off.
Okay, that's quite
the potential for scarring is quite high. Some doctors like it. I was quite keen on it at first, just thinking, wow, here's something really new. Then you think, no, hang on, just wait. What have you learned in the past? Just wait.
That's interesting, because the guinea pig element of it, let's not forget, as a working journalist, there's currency in being first.
There is currency in being first. I mean, for a long time, I mean, lovely people in this area, like an old school dermatologist called Nick Lowe, who I'm sure you'll have spoken to over time. I used to ring him up regularly from the Standard and pester him, saying, What's new? And say, young lady, we are not inventing new procedures for your amusement. This whole area works by a process of evolution, not revolution. So we take tried and trusted and well-proven things, and we practice with those, and they evolve. And we're not coming up with reinventing the wheel the whole time, but... And of course, that's how it should be. But, you know, yeah, as a journalist, you get hardwired to chase novelty, don't you? I mean, from my very first job, I was writing about shopping and it was new stuff. It was new sort of designer knickknacks and stuff. And I had to fill 3 pages of the Telegraph Weekend supplement every week with new things. So from then right through to now, when scrolling through Instagram, all these amazing novelties pop up. I'm a terrible one for buying all those in the middle of the night because you think, oh, this looks like absolutely must have a drain weasel to pull out hair and
Instagram and ads are doing my bank balance in, honestly.
But they're irresistible, that novelty. But in this area, yeah, just wait and see. Just wait and see what's good. Just wait and see what a tried and trusted practitioner would suggest. I mean, that's the key thing really in this area also, not something I've done, but something I would advise, is to find a practitioner you know and like and form a relationship with them going forward, so you can have, rather than rushing in and saying, I want such and such done to my face, you can have a thoughtful chat about how you feel about your face, what you might try now, what your budget allows, what you might try after that. And then you can find a way to manage the whole process of that facial slide into older age. I don't want to sound down on this, because, you know, aging is so normal and natural, and ideally what we all need to do is to accept that and come to terms with it. Except now there are so many options that I feel one can perfectly easily accept the fact that you're getting older, but also do it in the way you want. I mean, it's the fab thing about this whole area, that there are these options, whether you simply want to clear your thread veins with a quick bit of IPL zapping, or whether you want a wholesale face tightening virtual facelift, or whatever you call it, a liquid facelift done with fillers, or the kind of skin resurfacing that will give you a whole new complexion. You know, the options are there. So it's whatever suits. I always think it's like there's a sliding scale of what's acceptable in beauty, going back to your point about how people judge these things, because makeup, everyone's okay with makeup these days, aren't they? Hair colouring, you know, 30 years ago, we wouldn't admit to hair colouring so easily. After hair colouring, we come along to maybe teeth whitening, cosmetic dentistry, and then you get to this whole area of treatments. Even if celebs are talking about stuff they've had done, they will usually talk about light treatments and laser, which seem to be the acceptable side of it. And the final bit is needle-led things, which are where the big reluctance comes in. And, you know, I understand that. On the website I've done to go along with the book, there's a way of identifying which treatments might suit your particular concerns. And we've got a slider of options there. So you can choose needles or no needles, pain, low, medium, high, price band. Downtime, yeah. Are you prepared for any downtime? Because, you know, we're all so busy now. We're all so sort of visible that maybe you don't want to have 2 days with your face looking bright red. But most of these procedures are now delivered in much lower energy ways, so that rather than having, say, a skin peel that would take off half your face, like, you know, Samantha in Sex and the City, that was 2002. You know, that was a long time ago, and yet that image persists of, if you have a chemical peel, that's what your face will look like. But now they do peels in a really gentle, layered way, and they'll do them over a course of weeks, so you'll get all that result, but just in a...
And you can get peel products.
You can get peel products
in a way you couldn't. Like, if we think
absolutely
about all
you know, God, glycolic acid. What do we do without it beforehand?
I don't know. I only started using retinol just over a year ago, and I still...
How'd you find it?
I really like it. It brings me up in whiteheads on my chin, though.
Really?
It's really weird.
Okay.
Only when I'm easing my way into it.
Yeah, I love adapted retinols. I think that there are somewhere they've tweaked the molecules to be more effective and less aggressive, so you get the effect of the skin boosting without quite so much of the flaking and irritation.
I didn't dust, because it's called dusting, isn't it, as well?
Is so it? Where your skin goes...
Begins to peel off. And I started off with it was a 0 point something.
Yeah.
And then I was like, nothing's happening. Moved on to a 1%. And nothing happened.
Wow.
You could use it every single night. I've obviously got the skin of a rhino, honestly.
It looks lovely. And then, gleaming. I can see it in the daylight.
And then I moved on to the Neostrata Nag. And I...
Oh, yeah.
That's
okay.
A strong one. And it took a while, but I did begin to dust. But if I use Sunday Riley Good Jeans, I dust almost immediately.
Really? Mm. Goodness. So that's funny. A good way of judging how it's working for you. Yeah, I've got this new Medicaid one. I love the whole Medicaid range, because they can step you up all the way from the bottom to the top. But their latest one combines both of the previous latest incarnations of... There's one ingredient called R-retinoate, which is an adapted form of retinol, which is something like 8 times stronger, but with no irritation. And they've combined that with another ingredient in that kind of retinoids going from the retinyl palmitate through retinol up to retinaldehyde and then retinoic acid at the very top of the chain. Okay, and this one, crystal retinal, that's retinaldehyde, so that's nearly retinoic acid anyway. Right. So that's pretty strong stuff. And they put that with the R-retinoate together in one product, and they did say go easy on it. So so I've been creeping up, most unlike me, rather than jumping in and saying, yeah, right, let's kind of bath in this stuff. I've been doing it twice a week and now every couple of days. But then a makeup artist said the other day, oh, what have you done to your skin? And you think, actually, I don't think it's the retinol. I think it's a sort of stress of the last month or so, sort of lack of sleep. You said, yeah, I think I'll just leave it until life calms down a bit, because, yeah, all the self-publishing and the race to get this all done and out has been quite a journey, but quite fun.
Yeah, it does seem like it's been sort of quick.
Yeah, I didn't really say to anybody that I was working on, because it seemed too boring to sort of say, oh, I'm writing a book, and then not produce the book. And particularly because I haven't got a publisher nagging me along.
Yeah.
It's quite hard to see exactly how long it's going to take, because I sort of fitted this in around other things until I felt I really needed to get on with it. But anyway, it's here now.
But you have
great.
Written, the chapters are, and the sections within the chapters are written like very informative how-to articles. So was it a simple process transitioning into the book writing?
No, it's absolute agony. And I don't know why, because I write a lot for the newspapers, particularly for the Mail, who often want a lot of stuff in very short order.
Mm.
I'd had one weekend where I wrote so much of a supplement for them that I came away thinking, yeah, sure, 10,000 words a weekend, I could crack out a book in no time. but no, it took a lot longer. It was paragraph by painful paragraph. And I think of Sally Hughes, fabulous Sally Hughes, who was sort of saying you have to think of it as a series of articles, I think was how her agent had said to her to just do. But you know what we're all like with articles, you know, it's that sort of deadline crisis thing, you essay crisis, you don't actually do it until
the end.
It's really urgent. And if nobody is saying hurry up with it, it's harder to motivate yourself. So also it's structuring it into a coherent way, because I would just put down all the information, and then my brother, who's a technical editor and who went through all of this, was saying, we need an introduction here, we need an explanation there. When you say this, do you actually mean that? Do you think, oops, yes? So it's frustratingly slow, but it's got to be, because it's got to be all there, and it's got to look...
But you're
how it looks.
From a family of published authors, though.
Yeah, but that's another pressure, isn't it? You know, why have I never written a novel? I wonder, you know, for far too scared to put something out that like that. But yeah, sort of books is what they do. My dad produced a book last year. My mum produced a book last year. I don't know how many my brother did. So, yeah, just kind of...
I went book shopping on a Sunday and picked up this book, because it was about... It's the most significant clinical trials. And I didn't really look at...
I'm awestruck.
Didn't really look at much. And then I got it home, looked at the name, and then took a picture of it and sent it to you. And you said, oh, yes, Uncle. And I forgot the name.
Oh, Uncle Adam.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. He did a lot of sort of TV science stuff. Mm. His gig was he was a producer with Yorkshire TV, and then he got into wanting to talk about local scientists in a particular area who had discovered some amazing scientific principle. And he thought the way to do this would be to get on his mountain bike in his day-glow cycling clothes and pedal up and down the dales, sort of pointing out that here lived so-and-so who discovered this one amazing scientific principle years back. And then he'd recreate the experiment with a lot of flashes and bangs. And
amazing.
When he put that together, we said this is never going to make a program, but I actually it did. And he went on to do a lot of things after that, like the what the Romans did for us and what the Victorians did for us. Yeah, and he could wander up and down the sewers of London pontificating about the Romans or Victorians or whoever had created this particular wonder.
Yeah. And this was about, I think, Pavlov's dogs.
Oh, yes.
You never say that.
Yes.
Was one of the things he was talking about, like the things that we've now... This is, if you've heard this expression, this is the derivation.
And
this
Which is
really interesting. It's great.
Handy.
Great little read. Nice little Sunday afternoon read. So, speaking of skincare, I am interested, and I'm sure my listeners are. We know the tweakments that you've tried. We know that you go back and you do your fillers once a year. And you might have Botox 2 to 3 times a year. So we know the things that you obviously tried and liked enough to go back. But in terms of skincare... Are there any particular brands, ingredients? Obviously, we've covered retinol.
Yeah.
That you would say, if you are on the tweakment path or thinking about it, these are the sorts of things to be thinking about too.
Yeah, I always like and would direct people towards maybe the more cosmeceutical brands, as one might call them. Cosmeceutical being that kind of thing, it's halfway between a cosmetic and a pharmaceutical product, that's not a legal term, so it's often quite loosely used. But brands like Neostrata, which you mentioned, Priori, PCA, Medicate, Epios, Exuviance, it's a sort of sister one of Neostrata. There's loads of others that I've not mentioned.
Oh, Paula's Choice, because Paula's
Choice, I adore. Mm. Yeah. Oh my goodness, that is one of my absolute favourites. I spend more money on Paula's Choice products than any other brand. Absolutely seriously, because several of us in this family use, particularly the because she does everything by texture. That's what I love so much. So if you've got an oily complexion, which I still have down the middle of my face, and you want a sunscreen, particularly I always want a sunscreen. She's got a couple of absolute crackers. There's an SPF 30 and SPF 50 in the Resist line. Super light, but moisturising. And because she really knows her ingredients, I trust those products.
Yes.
But they walk. Also, her salicylic acid, the 2% salicylic acid, which is so great just for declogging pores because it's a beta-hydroxy acid. It's the only one that's lipophilic, isn't it? So it dissolves in fat, so it gets into those clogged pores. Mm. It has a light exfoliating effect. I remember the first time I met Paula at a press thing, and she was talking about having oilier skin as you get older, which she still does.
Yeah.
Oh, right, wow, okay, I could really relate to this. And the super light antioxidants she does. And she's got an omega serum as well. I love that omega serum. It sinks right in without provoking any oiliness in the face. Because I know you're a late convert to serums, aren't you? Well, I mean, like two years ago, because I know you used to like a really heavy cream.
Well,
but now you've...
I used to use serums, but I don't think I knew why I was using them.
Okay.
Shame on me. I was using...
It's so confusing, even if we work in this area, isn't it? I mean, you know, there's so much.
Well... I also say I wasn't so much a beauty editor as a product placer because I didn't have a lot of copy.
Okay.
So I would go to a press launch and I would be given a range and I would use that range, but I wouldn't necessarily understand why I was using the component parts.
Oh, okay.
I understood the marketing message of that range because that's as much as the room that I had to convey in my editorial. But yeah, so...
Oh yeah, Ingrid, now SkinCeuticals. That's another one I love because... Like the Paula's Choice Omega Serum, SkinCeuticals, has got this fantastic triple lipid restore cream. It's really good for older skins because it's got cholesterol and ceramides and fatty acids, but with more cholesterol than most things, which is no good for younger skin, but on older skin, that really helps repair the barrier and all the rest. And that just helps, it particularly helps if you've got retinol going on and possibly a bit of dusting and whatever, that will help keep the barrier stable. And yeah, SkinCeuticals have got a fantastically good pair of vitamin C's as well.
C ferulic
and Floritin. I prefer the Floritin because it's not so heavy, though it's quite difficult to recommend it to people unless they've got a big budget because it's like 130 quid.
Yeah, it is.
But it is a good product. But then, you've got all these fantastic new brands with single ingredient things or single-ish ingredients like the Garden of Wisdom. Mm-hmm. I've been trying that vitamin C. That seems quite nice. Like the Inkey List, like theirs. They've got a really good zinc sunscreen.
Yes.
You think zinc, ooh, not sure. That will be a white cast, but it's not. It's really good. And The Ordinary, of course, love The Ordinary. Their vitamin C, though, that's quite savage. That's a bit like they're the night one. And DCL, so you think of one product, then you think another.
The DCL 30%.
It's fab, yeah.
Gritty.
Though gritty and in that non-water, what you call it, anhydrous base. Mm. So it feels quite silicony as it goes on, but lovely result.
Okay, so say I'm...
Sorry, I can go on.
I know, but I'm mindful of time.
I know.
So someone listens to this or someone follows Caroline or follows you or follows Nadine and thinks, well, I really need to start using a vitamin C. I want to deal with pigmentation. I want to have brighter skin, etc. How honestly can you compare... Because you've got your DCL, which is expensive and is at 30%, which is gritty. You've got your Ordinary. If I say I'm using this vitamin C, what advice would you give to listeners as somebody who uses these products and understands them as well a bit more because you speak to the formulating chemists as well? Obviously, they're not all created equal. So is it a case of you get what you pay for? How would you compare?
Oh, that's such a good question. And it's so difficult to answer. I would go to a brand I know and like and trust, like Medicate, and they've got a sort of spin-off line called the Hero Project. Have you seen that one? And the Hero Project has got a fantastic vitamin C, is what made me think of that. It's in a clear glass bottle, but it's incredibly well stabilized, so it does what it says on the jar and its results are proven, and it's not too expensive. I would say start with the not so expensive stuff. If you have never tried a vitamin C or a hyaluronic acid, and maybe you only want to try one of those brands that's going to cost less than a tenner that we mentioned, like, what's that, Garden of Wisdom, Inculus, Ordinary, that's a good way into it. You will get slightly more out of it with a more carefully formulated, with a more, slightly more complex product, like something from, I like the Medicate vitamin C's because they come in tiny bottles. So for like 29 quid, you can have a starter go at it. You can get an idea of how it feels like on the skin.
Right.
You can begin to see. The trouble is you need to use it probably for a month or two to see results.
And it's like you're saying, use it like you use medicine.
Yeah, and you've got to be consistent with that. Though obviously if you start seeing any redness or irritation, use less, stop it, back off, just be sensible. But it's not always a case of you get what you pay for. I mean, with some of the really high-tech stuff involving growth factors and whatever, like there's a line called AQ Solutions, which, shame on me, I don't know as much about as I ought because it's super complicated stuff. And I tend to think, oh, that's all going to be smoke and mirrors. But so many of the facialists who work in salons, they say if they use that kind of product with a bit of light microneedling, they're getting astonishing results. So that serum has clearly got something very special going for it. And there are some people who like to throw a lot of money at things. And so for them, that's really difficult. What I have difficulty with is the beautiful, heavily marketed stuff like you were talking about earlier, where an awful lot of the money has gone on the marketing, the paying of famous people to support the messaging on the distribution on the stands in stores, and what's actually in the jar is okay, and it certainly will be better than their previous iterations of the product, but it's not necessarily going to be amazing. Mm. So really you need to look at where you are at the moment with skincare, and you've got to cleanse properly, otherwise there's no point in putting stuff on a dirty face, and then try adding in one thing like a vitamin C serum and sunscreen. Also, no point in doing anything if you don't wear sunscreen, because you've got to protect your skin from the UV light anyway in the first place. But also, by protecting it, you give your skin a chance to do its job, which is to repair itself, which is going on the whole time. Sam Bunting was pointing this out the other day, actually, how there is research to show that just wearing sunscreen gives your skin a break from the trying to defend itself from the world. Right. And so you can give it that little bit of help even by wearing that. So vitamin C, sunscreen, and then think about some sort of retinoid at night. Mm. Start with a retinol. I love like Murad as a sort of easy high street way in. It's not really high street, is he? It's a bit rather more specialised than high street. Or a line like Elizabeth Arden with their new...
That's
so clever. Mm. Yes, of course, you talked to Dendi Benkelman, didn't you?
Yeah.
Because there's retinol, enough to do a good job. There's ceramides to counteract, but to help your skin acclimatize to it and to maintain that skin barrier. All comes in a handy little thingy, a little capsule, so you know how much you should be using, because that's another trouble in this area, isn't it? Do I put on a drop or two? Do I cover everything? You know, particularly if you're going to take it from the chest up to the hairline. I'm fanning around, not saying Caroline's phrase, take it to the tits, but that is her phrase, but that is what you've got to do.
Yeah.
Particularly because we all ignore this bit, and then, you know, you get into 50s and you think your neck and your décolletage, they are much harder to work on than your face with all these treatments, because the skin's very thin in that area and it's more of an uphill struggle. So just use those products all over, and then you won't have the trouble when you get older. I think I'm wandering off the subject
here. I didn't know as well. Well, I didn't realise that with some of the pumps, that's a dose, and they have the amount that is distributed, or the amount that is dispensed in one pump, is a dose.
Yeah.
And whereas I would just go...
Yeah, I think it depends on how much you want to use. It's like also, let's see what I need to do to get a result. I mean, I'm sure... And you could think of it as the Nadine principle, if you like. I remember she and I were both sent this really complicated IPL hair removal thing 10 years ago or something, a home use device, but it was really a salon thing. It was about the size of this steam humidifier that's sort of sitting there because we've got water coming in through the ceiling. And I saw her a while after, and she said, how are you getting on with that thing? And I said, oh, it's so complicated, I haven't got it out of the box, because the instruction leaflet was this thing. She said, oh, I just... got it out, turned it up to full, let's go. Whoa!
No,
that is the way to go for it.
Genuinely,
that's... So I did the same.
Yeah. When I went on her channel, when I went on her video channel to discuss facial hair...
Oh, yeah.
We got out the Philips LeMayer, and I said... And we were talking about, you know, do your patch test.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, just whack it up to 5.
Yes.
She just... Otherwise, by the way, I do not encourage that. Always read the instructions.
No, you should always read the instructions and do a patch test, but... Yeah, if you're in a hurry and you've got to write about it, then maybe you might. Or if you think, you know, I think my skin's quite used to all these things. If I'm trying a new retinoid, I mean, I did go slow with that last Medicate one I was mentioning, just because I thought I should show it some respect. But normally I just get handfuls of the stuff because my skin is quite well retinized, as Dendi Engelman would call it. You grow more receptors for dealing with it. And then, you know, your skin can take it. But yeah, vitamin C one end of the day, retinol the other, add in whatever moisturizers you need. If you've got the time to add in more serums on top, fine, go for it. But I find really, who's got time to be faffing around with a 10-step program? It's
not me.
It's a particular...
The temptation is to basically go through every single tweakment, but obviously
that's... What takes your interest in this? You know, what? Because I don't know, I thought I put everything down... Because I don't know, different people are interested in different things. And it's also about trying to work out what the recipe for a fresher face is, you know, what the experts say, what you should start with. But there's no should. You know, it's all what bothers you. I think the light treatments are really quite interesting because they're kind of underrated. You know, red light, people think, oh, boring, lie under a red light canopy, what's that going to do?
It's somebody's new clothes again. It's like, really? Is this light doing anything?
But it is. I mean, that's the thing. It is. And the doctors say the one difficulty they have with that is persuading people to do a course of that and that that is enough. Come and come into the salon, do it twice a week, or get a home-use mask. Then you can do it the whole time. You'll need to do a bit more because the home-use devices aren't as strong as the salon things, obviously. But it helps the skin regenerate itself. It will help with pigmentation. It will take down inflammation. It will encourage regeneration. And you get a result. It's really well proven.
So you sleep under red light? Because I just think, well, if we're getting bashed, because we are, all of us do it, I do it. I watch the iPad before bed and my phone's not too far away. And if I wake up in the middle of the night, which I invariably do, I'll always just quickly check my phone.
Will you? Yeah. That light.
I'm a horrible person. But I
just think... It's just it's really bad for your poor old brain.
But, I know. And it's a habit I absolutely know I should get out of. But it's an addiction at this point, isn't it? I keep my phone out of the bedroom. But if I go to the bathroom and I see it, I think, I'll just check.
Yeah.
But now think, maybe I should just sleep under red light.
Quite hard to stay asleep. I've got one of these lovely masks downstairs, Mariam Zamani's one. But the light in that is so bright, you kind of feel you've had a session on the beach or something.
Oh, I see.
So
right.
I don't think you could sleep.
That's a product I will work on.
With it on.
Like low-level red light for cell rejuvenation and regeneration.
Yeah, but you only need it on 20 minutes a day. Some of these things have big enough... eye slits that you could watch TV with mainly. But
I've used the Neutrogena one, which has got the blue and red light for inflammation and acne.
Yes, and that gets results, doesn't it? They've got data to show it gets results if you use it consistently enough. So that's a really good kind of high street level starter one. What I don't know, what I've got to do some research on, is exactly what the power of the lights in all these different competing types of masks is. Because I've been talking about these things on social and the number of questions I've come back saying, so how do they actually stack up? And it's really hard to get a direct answer about how many lights, what power, what it all equates to.
Because it's not like a wattage. They can't just say it's a 40-watt bulb.
There must be some easy way of communication. But I know the last people I asked said, that's actually a very complicated question because, how to make a complicated question simple. That's always the great difficulty.
So the temptation, obviously, is to say to you, Alice, what was your favourite treatment or what was your least favourite treatment? But I'd like to come at it from a different angle.
Okay.
Because there is so much in here. So just to give you listeners, because I do... If you are interested in skincare and if you think that you're going to go down the tweakment path or you're already on that path and you want to have an expert's input in your approach, this is an excellent book. This is an excellent reference book. But so in terms of treatments, you've got things like the Face Gym Signature Electrical Workout, the Clarisonic Massage Head, the Face Shrink Wrapper.
These are home devices.
Because
there is a good deal you can do with those. Yeah.
Then you've got Profilo, Juvederm.
Love that.
Clearing pigment. Joe Jones having Profilo just made me want to have all of it.
It's great. It's expensive, but, it does a really good job. And the thing about Profilo compared to its competitors is you only have to have 5 injections on each side of the face. So that is a big draw rather than having 200 injections.
Then you do have the thread lift. It's because I saw fat
thread lift. Yeah, I haven't gone there yet. I'm
old therapy, which I know a lot of people have had. So I think the thing I want to find out from you in closing would be of all of these things, because I think I always thought if you ever go down the tweakment road, you start with a particular thing, and I always thought that everyone's first stop would actually be wrinkle relaxers. So I'm curious to know which of these things you have been most impressed by, both from your own personal experience, but from the data.
Okay, that is a really good question. I know what you mean, that wrinkle relaxers are the most obvious place to start. It so depends what's bothering you, and it so depends how you feel about keeping these things up. It also depends on what age you are at, because 10 years ago, I would have been most bothered by wanting to get rid of the dark circles under my eyes and frown lines. It's between the eyebrows. I don't have like tram lines, but I get a sort of pleat which just settles in there the whole time and pinches. Whereas now, what I find most amazing because of the difference it makes to the structure of my face is deep-placed filler, like round the corners of the jaw and in the chin and the temples. I had quite a lot of it last year, and I've just had some pictures done of how's it bearing up kind of thing, and a lot of that is still there. I mean, the stuff in my mid-face, if I drop my face forward, all that shag on the nose to mouth lines, that's coming back, but the rest of it is holding up really well. So that is what one thing I really like now. The other thing is all these skin quality treatments, because the older you get, you know, you go through the menopause, you lose all that estrogen, your skin will get drier without that. I'm propped up with bioidentical hormones, so that sort of helps keep some of the glow in the skin. But when your skin gets that older papery look, it's really hard to bring back the life into it. But injectable moisture treatments, as you might call them, like Profilo, Juvederm Volite, Restylane Skin Boosters, there's a Teoxane one as well, I can't remember the name of it, that they put that little layer of hyaluronic acid just under the surface of the skin, and they're now termed biostimulators, I think, rather than moisturizers, because they encourage that cellular regeneration within the skin. Yeah, it's been shown they encourage the growth of collagen, the development of elastin, they, as well as hydrating, so they help your skin to function better.
So the skin goes, well, normally when we've got this much hyaluronic acid, it's because we're younger.
Yeah. Okay. And what you notice after a month or so is that, what I notice is you simply don't need moisturiser in the way you did. Your skin is not so dry because, yeah, it's got that hydration on the inside. And it just has a little bit more of that glow and radiance, which is what you lose and otherwise you cannot get back. Obviously makeup, you can load it. You're brilliant with makeup. I'm less skilled, but the putting that moisture back in on the inside is fantastic. So that is one I'm really keen on, and beyond wrinkles and stuff, that adds a really nice freshening look to the face.
Well, I also think it's that thing of fine lines and wrinkles are not the first signs of aging. In fact, once they have begun, previous signs such as skin texture.
Yeah, and pigmentation. Everybody always kind of skates over pigmentation, but there's lots of research showing that actually our eye is always incredibly well attuned to working out a person's age by the degree of pigmentation on their face. I think Procter & Gamble did some research on this about 10 years ago with some evolutionary psychologists, and they showed that it was the degree of red or brown pigment distribution on the face, the sort of weathering that we all kind of know. And that's what the eye perceives. And that actually was a better determinant of age than wrinkling or otherwise.
Yeah.
So, and I think people fixate on the wrinkles because we all, you know, don't like them. We want to have that smooth look. But having a clear skin as well by using skincare, like retinol helps with pigmentation, vitamin C helps with pigmentation, all sorts of things, you know, niacinamide and all these ingredients will help, as will light treatments. But it's sort of not to lose sight of that in among the going for the more wow things of Botox and fillers.
Yeah. It's a really, really brilliant guide.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
I mean, obviously, I do text you. And so I feel like if I went down this road anyway, I feel like I've got excellent people on my speed dial. But I feel that the treatments guide is the equivalent of having you bag of hirons in your pocket.
Thank you. And finding a good practitioner, because that is the key thing. That's what the book can't really help with that. I've listed a lot of good people in there who do, but these are just people I happen to have had treatments with in time, and a lot of them are in London just because that's where I am. But on the website, what I'm trying to do is to widen that out a lot, and I've got a great network building up of practitioners all around the country, nurses, dentists, doctors, surgeons who do these things, and they are all over. And when I come across the ones whose work I don't know, you know, I get them recommended to me. So these people are doing good work. You know, they're not just sort of jumping their way into the list. They're having to get the ones who are on the list already to recommend them to me. So because there are a lot of good people out there, I think people tend to think, oh, there's all those dodgy doctors. And there are some dodgy practitioners. There are a lot of dodgy practitioners, but there are an awful lot of really good ones.
Upsettingly, you hear about the bad ones more than you hear about the good
ones. You do, and all the good ones spend half their time redoing the work of the bad ones, which is very distressing. You know, they have dissolving clinics on a regular basis. Mm. They do pro bono work to help like this. But there are a lot of good ones out there, and I really want to, you know, open up the whole conversation in this area and try to help people find good practitioners. So if they are interested in this kind of work, they could experience it with a safe pair of hands, maybe get a good result, and then they'll see what it's all about.
Well, I think it achieves that. I really, really like it. I will be holding it close to my chest.
Thank you so much.
The link to buy this book, Tweakman, The Tweakman's Guide by Alice Hart Davis, will be in the show notes. And obviously your social media handles so people can follow you. But while we're on tape, I want to say something to you.
Go for it.
And that is this. When I started this podcast, and this will go live just before the podcast's third birthday, when I first started this podcast, the majority of people, when I said what I was doing, when I went out to beauty launches and events, were like, oh, I don't really get it. Beauty's not really visual. How are you going to do a beauty podcast about audio? And I was met with a bit of, oh, what a podcast? And I remember you came straight up to me the first time you knew that I was doing it. And you went, you clever thing.
Oh,
I really
did
like
I?
What you
good,
did.
Good.
And because I mean,
that's
needy.
What I thought. I've been an avid listener from the start, and just thinking, you communicate it so well, and you take us off to people like, who are you talking to then? Abby Cleave, all sorts of fascinating people in this area. And you think, oh, holding your hand, we can go and explore.
So I just wanted to say on tape for the listeners, if you didn't know that, back in the early days, when there weren't people listening, and when I would say, oh, I'm doing a podcast, and I was very excited, and no one else was, you're one of the very few people who was not only really excited, but said, keep going, you're onto something. So thank you.
Well, I'd like to say now I knew. But it just felt absolutely right. You know, I'm a big fan of podcasts, gurus like the ones we both listen to. Are we allowed to mention?
Yeah, okay. We can talk about Tim.
I thought we might end up talking quite a lot about Tim Ferriss. I love all that biohacking stuff. I'm so keen on all of that.
The film that he's just helping finance.
Oh,
have you seen this in his
No,
I'll tell you about it off tape.
Okay,
so
okay.
We might be pushing it for the listeners.
Altering states with breathing and micro dosing of all sorts
psychotropics.
At first I thought, silly Silicon Valley boys stuff, I'm not listening to that. But now I'm starting to think, oh, yes, please.
If I ever get Tim on the show, could you come over and just call him
one day.
Silicon Valley boy?
I think he might like it.
I think
he's now in Austin,
well.
Texas. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Thank you so much. Again, the link to buy will be in the show notes, as will your social media handles. But thank you so much, not just
Emma,
for today,
thank
but for
you.
Your unerring support since I started the show.
Always. Thanks, Em.
Thank you so much for listening. Now, before you go, just a quick reminder that if you want to email me, it's super easy. TheBeautyPodcast@gmail.com. Honestly, what could be easier? Or you can slide into my DMs on Twitter and Instagram. You pretty much know I'm on Instagram and Twitter all the time. My username there is @EmmaGunns. And if you want to join the closed Facebook group for the show, where we have really lovely, brilliant conversations about all of the episodes, then just click the link to join in the show notes, which can be found wherever it is that you are streaming and downloading this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you on the next one.